Welcome to Crash Concepts, where the economy, energy, and the environment are explored. Up next, fresh ideas and insights into the factors that are driving the world and shaping your future. Presenting information you can't afford to live without, here's Chris Martinson.
Welcome to this Peak Prosperity Podcast. I am your host, Chris Martinson, and it is August 24th, 2016. Well, listen, the monetary experiments, or should I say the madness, just continues. Here we are in August. We're looking at stock markets around the world, either near highs or in the United States cases, hitting all-time highs or near it. And this morning, here we are, August 24th, and what did I see this morning? But gold took a big shellacking. My one-minute resolution on my screen is not nearly enough to detect what happened. 10,148 contracts dumped in that one-minute window, probably took 100 milliseconds to actually execute if I had the resolution, meaning we're still looking at shenanigans in the gold markets, but we're seeing shenanigans in all kinds of markets. And it starts here. $180 billion of freshly printed liquidity, courtesy of Japan and the European Central Bank, now coming into the market on a daily basis. In the case of Europe, we're seeing the European Central Bank preferentially printing up money and now handing it to corporations through direct private placements, meaning money gets printed out of thin air, and a corporation that has a bond they would like to sell doesn't even have to go to the open market. It just goes straight into the European Central Bank. This is direct helicopter money from the European Central Bank to select preferred corporations. Who knows how they get picked, but if you believe it's an open, free, fair, transparent process, I have a bridge to sell you. So here we are. We're living under a regime of extreme financial repression. It's global. It's larger than any attempted before. Pensions are suffering really badly. Savers are getting killed. Endowments are bleeding. But speculators and big trading outfits with insider connections, the closer the better, they have advantages and they are having a field day. But how do we protect? How do we protect our financial wealth during such times? Now, that's always one of the bigger questions that I field, and it's a really large one, and I'm really glad to have us have an expert today to help us make some sense of this. I can think of nobody better to invite back to the program than a good friend of mine, Mike Maloney, the founder and owner of GoldSilver.com. And he's the man who funded and produced the absolute gem of a series called The Hidden Secrets of Money. So let's just get started. Mike, it's so good to have you back on the show.
It's great to be back, Chris. Thanks for having me.
Oh, it's great to have you. So, hey, here's a softball. How much do you trust what the central banks are up to?
Well, I think that laugh says it, basically. That, you know, the thing is, what they're doing has never worked. And they keep on trying, you know, you just hit that nail a little bit harder each time because it isn't working. They have these theories, and they think that the theory is correct. That this, and no matter what the results are, they say, well, we just didn't do enough of it. Well, we just, you know, and, you know, Japan has been trying this for 30 years now, and it hasn't worked. These people are just absolutely dangerous. They're going to drag the entire world economy down. You know, you talked about the helicopter money that's now happening in Europe and so on. And that's going to be coming to the United States soon, so coming to a central bank near you. And it always has damaging results, and they don't look at this. And it's a huge wealth transfer. The immorality of an entity, and everywhere I go, I take a look at, when I would go speak in Singapore or Australia, New Zealand, Malaysia, Colombia, Peru, it doesn't matter, you know, Russia. Everywhere I go, I take a look, I go on the websites of the central bank for that country and I start gathering information. And I haven't found a central bank that's actually part of the government. They're all private. So here's a private entity that's allowed to create currency. And now they're buying bonds from corporations. And, you know, if you look at the what they're allowed to do, they can buy stock, so they're actually buying up. If you look at the Fed's balance sheet, a very large portion of the assets that they purchased to be able to create currency, because that's how they create it. They buy an asset. When they write a check and they buy something, currency is created and it enters circulation. A very large portion of it is Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac stuff. It's the mortgage-backed securities. And so that means that they own real estate. This private corporation is able to counterfeit and purchase real estate legally. The morality of this is just, there's insanity going.
It's a critical point. I try and make this, that the largest landowner or real estate holding entity in the United States today is a private going concern that prints money out of thin air and now owns about $1.3 trillion worth of U.S. residential real estate.
Yes. It's crazy. This is insane. And the average person, I mean, this stuff does come out on mass media, but the average person can't connect the dots. And so they don't know that it's this corporation that is owned, the stock in the Federal Reserve is owned by the world's largest banks. And so...
Wait. The average person might be catching on. I know you produced a video about this. I loved the Federal Reserve did something crazy foolish, even as foolish as the money printing. They started up a Facebook web page. Uh-huh. I loved the comments that showed up under that. I loved it.
aren't they great? It's everybody. I mean, the jig is up, basically. Everybody knows that the Federal Reserve does more damage than good. And that, you know, the comments, one of them was a quick question. I'm trying to take over a country through enslavement and currency debasement. Have you got any pointers for me? I love that one.
I posted my own under there and I said along the lines of, hey guys at the Fed, I'm sure you know this, but you're attempting to create infinite exponential expansion of monetary claims on a finite planet. I know you've done loads of studies to show how you can do this sustainably. I haven't been able to find them. Could you please point me to them? Thanks in advance, anxiously awaiting your response.
Excellent.
I haven't heard from them yet. I'm waiting.
Well, yep, it's a question they can't answer. That's the, you know, Keynesian economics isn't even remotely plausible. And this is what is taught all over the world. But, you know, there is a fundamental, the purchasing power that is contained in currency is basically the agreement that we have as a society that we're all going to use that currency and we trust that currency and we store hours of our lives. We trade hours of our lives for currency. We work. That is the purchasing power. And then that currency measures the goods and services in existence of in a society, the true wealth. And they think that they can actually type wealth. And when they type new units of currency, it has to, the only way it can get purchasing power is the moment that it's spent into circulation, it has to steal it from somewhere else because it's empty when it comes into existence. There's no work that went into it. There were no hours of life traded for it. There's no product or service that it represents until it is spent into circulation, and then it steals that purchasing power from all other units of currency. So it's fraud, it's theft, and they can't actually stimulate an economy. All they can do is warp it. They can steal purchasing power from some areas of the economy and transfer it to another area of the economy, pushing that area into a bubble. And so it's very, very disruptive. They don't understand fundamental economics. This is the problem, that we have all economies on the planet are being run by economists that don't understand economics.
Mm-hmm. It's absolutely true. And so the shorthand version that I love what The Hidden Secrets of Money does for this, and anybody who watches that or takes a tour through the crash course, hopefully you come away with some understanding of the mechanisms of money creation, because it's all gobbledygook until you strip it away, and then we can say things like, you can't print your way to prosperity. And so that's shorthand for the idea of what's under that is what you're suggesting and alluding to and stating even directly here, which is that when monetary printing happens, you literally take from somebody and you give it to somebody else. Now, the Soviet Politburo crop reports and command and control economy said, hey, that doesn't work, having a small committee of people deciding who should win, who should lose, and how much investment should be made in a specific area. It turns out that's not the right way to go about that. We reject that when we call it communism, but we accept it when we call it the Federal Reserve. I don't understand why, but let's look at this simply.
Central you should bank. Have said, but we reject it when it's called communism, but we accept it when it's called Keynesianism.
So let's here it is. It's simple, like Japan, right? So Japan says, oh, we need a weaker currency because that'll help us somehow, right? We got to keep this Ponzi scheme going. So weaker currency is good. So they debase their currency badly starting in November 2014. And they jam it down about 26, 30% compared to the dollar. And next thing you know, the stock price of Sony and other exporters is going up, right? The problem is that all the people of Japan who rely on imports, and it's an importing nation for a lot of its food, all of its fuel, etc., they were just getting killed by this process. So it was really just saying, all you people of Japan, we're going to take purchasing power out of your pockets and we're going to give it to Sony. Because we like what Sony's going to do with it, but that's what the transfer was. It's just as direct as that. Every tick down in the yen helps somebody in Japan, let's call it a corporation, and it hurts somebody else. We'll call them an elderly person on a fixed income who has to, you know, live off of imported food and fuel. It's just a transfer. How does anybody think that a transfer is helpful to the system?
Well, it's beyond... that transfer, the government, their whole existence is redistribution of wealth, right? Through taxation and so on. But so you've got the central bank doing this evil thing, basically warping the economy, creating bubbles, and taking through fraud and theft, they are stealing purchasing power from the average person, like you said, transferring it to Sony, and making exports a little bit more attractive, but making all imports to Japan a whole lot more expensive. And it has nothing to do with the free market balancing imports and exports. So one day it will crash. But when you look at government redistribution of wealth, it's it's a little bit more efficient for a central bank to do this redistribution of wealth that you can't see, the smoke and mirrors redistribution by printing currency, devaluing a currency and so on. But when the government taxes and spends, they have to run it through all of these frictional layers where there's loss of purchasing power. There is no possibility that there is anything that the government can do for anybody that is a net positive for society, because there's a whole bunch of people that aren't producing something that you would open your wallet and purchase that, When you pay the IRS, all the people at the IRS have to get paid. They've got to make a living. They've got to eat. They've got to support their families, and they all get a little tiny fraction of what you've paid. And then it goes to the Treasury, and then Congress votes on some bill. But by the time they create a department, and everybody in the department gets paid, and then finally there's somebody that teaches your kid. But it comes at an expense that's twice as high as if you could just pay the person directly, the teacher directly, the way the free market would do it. And so everything that government does for us comes at a net loss for society. And the redistribution, there's frictional forces that absorb this economic energy on the way there. I mean, the people at the Fed have to get paid. So not only does it just redistribute the wealth, but there's a loss in that redistribution. So not letting the free market work, actually, it shortens lifespans. It makes us all poorer. It makes for a dirtier environment. If you look at economicfreedom.org or freetheworld.org, you'll see that the reports on economic freedom clearly show that the less regulation you have, the smaller the government is, the greater the integrity of the court system, the protection of property rights, and the soundness of money, the soundness of the currency that they use, whether they manipulate it or debase it or not, if they just leave it alone. When you have very little regulation, small government, and sound money, it creates maximum prosperity. And the countries, they audit 157 countries annually now. And the results go into a spreadsheet. And when they sort the spreadsheet, the countries that have the greatest economic freedom that float up to the top, the people live 20 years longer than the countries where they're trying to take care of everybody, where they're trying to redistribute everybody's wealth, where they're trying to, you know, it's so when you do these manipulations, the central banks, they're not committing murder because they don't know that they're shortening people's lifespans, but they are committing manslaughter.
Well, that's certainly very direct. Now I want to listen in this podcast. I'd love to direct people to the systemic issues are really well laid out in the Hidden Secrets of Money. I've got some in the Crash Course. There's a lot of those are the two best ones I know of, and yours is hands down, I think, absolutely the best description of the monetary process that exists out in the world today. It's just fantastic. The quality, the detail, the level of insight that went into it. And without going into it now, I want to direct people to that because you took the time to really look at how it's playing out worldwide and also historically how it has played out in the past. The summary, if I could be so bold, is to say this time is not going to be any different. We've tried this thing many, many times as humans. We want that free lunch. We want to think we're clever enough to sit around a mahogany table with a dessert trolley nearby and make a command decision that will play out for everybody. But it just doesn't really work that way. So there's the systemic issues. They're out there. They're recorded. I want to turn now to why the jig might be up, because we know the jig's going to be up sooner or later. And we know that every time the jig is up for different reasons. You know, the crash of 29 happened for a very different set of reasons than the land speculating crashes that have happened throughout, or the railroad crashes, or the housing bubble that started bursting in 2006 and 7. This time, what's different this time is that the central banks have printed all these giant gobs of money, $16, $17 trillion at last count, handed it over to the speculators in the top end of the financial markets. They pretended to be confused by why there's this amazing wealth disparity that popped up. No surprise to anybody who understands that that's how these things work. It's a feature, not an accident.
Yeah.
And I think my theory here, Mike, is that we have to look at the tippy top, not the 1%, but the 0.1%. Because they were the major recipients of this largesse. That's where we need to look for the first signs that the jig might be up. I've recently noted that the Aspen real estate markets rolled over, the Vancouver market, London property prices, Trophy in particular, New York City. Yeah. We're seeing now some signs that say the tippy top, for whatever reason, is retracting its horns. Are you seeing this?
Yeah, so it's very different. Every bubble pops differently, and the manipulation that the world's central banks did after the crisis of 08 has caused extreme bubbles. And the bubbles this time, you know, the first bubble that popped this century was the NASDAQ bubble, so it was stocks. The next bubble was stocks and real estate. This bubble is stocks, real estate, and bonds, because for these central banks to create currency, their major purchase is some sort of bond, some sort of debt instrument. When they purchase something, like I said, it creates currency. And they've been doing this extraordinary stimulus. And when they purchase bonds, they're adding to a market. So that pushes that. That's one of the mechanisms that pushes a market into a bubble is when a central bank gets involved in that market and starts buying. And so now we've got bubbles in stocks, real estate, and bonds. This is going to be one hell of a crisis. What was the question again? I went off on it.
Well, about how we might be detecting the jig is up.
Yeah. I did a report on the New York real estate recently, and I think the Vancouver dropped 20% in 1 month. This is the peak of we've passed the peak of the bubble. It is now deflating, and the thing is, there's usually a little tiny rollover and then a huge crash. And the little tiny rollover is just starting right now. But we're seeing it in the top end, as you said, where the currency that was created by the central banks went to that 0.1%. We're also seeing some problems in China. You know, I went to China to film an episode for Hidden Secrets of Money that's not out yet. I hope we get it out before the bubble pops. Uh-huh. Because the bubble there was a government-mandated bubble. And those bubbles can persist a lot longer than a bubble that comes from a manipulation of the free market, where the free market is still allowed to exist, when it's a government directly creating the bubble, and they were creating, and the building that was going on, government mandated building, was creating a real estate bubble there that was just unlike anything that you have ever seen. And so we're going to see within the next few years, you're going to see probably the greatest crash in history. I've often said that the crisis of 2008 was just a speed bump on the way to the main event. But yes, you are right. It has gone to the top 0.1%, and we are in the process right now of seeing this unwind.
I agree, and I think that a lot of people get their signals from the stock market. I believe, in my heart of hearts, that the U.S. stock market and many others are fully manipulated at this point in time, mm-hmm. meaning that because of the overt level of computerization, it's really child's play to get into a leveraged market, say, through futures or options, and throw a few million, tens of millions, maybe 100 million, and really stop the direction if the market's falling, or put a bid under it, or even goose it the other direction. It's really child's play. And I know that you know, in my heart of hearts, that these are being manipulated, because that's what I'd be doing if I had created these Franken markets. They really can't fall at this point in time. So they're not a good place, I think, to look for the early signals. I think the stock market ends up falling on its own at some point, because it's going to have to. But the early signals, that's the question, is where do you look to see that the jig is up? And so for me, I connect my anecdotes, collect them. One is going to these big wealth conferences with, you know, high-end pension, endowment, and family office money. They're nervous. They get it now. I used to be a contrarian at these things. Now I'm uncomfortably not, you know? I'm just another guy going, yeah, this monetary stuff's crazy, right? And so that's where I'm starting to collect those anecdotes in the real estate market. But again, this is going to be, it's going to come in a completely different way. And what you've said is really critical here. This isn't a stock bubble. This isn't a real estate bubble. It's not a bond bubble. It's all three. It's really an experiment that began somewhere in the late 70s that's coming to its final conclusion. This is the mother of all bubbles.
Yes. Yeah. Another one of the warning signs that tip off. Right now, the stock market is up. But I'm looking at a chart of the Dow Jones Industrial Average divided by the price of gold. And the Dow Jones, one share of the Dow was worth 17 ounces of gold at the end of November of last year. And today it's worth about, 13.78 was the close yesterday. So it's gone from 17 down, the Dow has gone from 17 ounces of gold to 13 ounces of gold. So you've got an invisible crash going on. Everybody thinks that stocks are rising. stocks are not rising in all forms of money. In precious metals, stocks are falling because precious metals are have been rising at a faster pace than stocks. Now, during some forms of economic collapse, the stock markets appear to be doing very well. But if they're not rising at a faster rate than the inflation rate, it's called an invisible crash, because you can be invested in the stock market and it can go up 100-fold. But if prices go up 200-fold, you've lost 50% of your purchasing power. That is exactly what happened during the Weimar hyperinflation. We've seen, and it's happening now in Venezuela. Venezuela, you know, I did a video back in 2013 showing some of the problems of Venezuela, and I wrote an article in 2013 or 2014 about Venezuela, that you know, that the medical care is breaking down, the middle class is gone, and the next steps are hyperinflation and revolution. And in The Hidden Secrets of Money, you know, we interviewed Max Kaiser one time, and he's talking about the risk reward of revolution. And when it comes to not being able to feed your family, when the price of food and the scarcity of food gets to a point where you can't feed your family, the risk of being killed in a revolution, the reward of having a revolution and potentially being able to feed your family again is greater than the risk of being killed.
And that's Venezuela today, certainly.
It's Venezuela today, but what worries me is we're going to be seeing this in a lot more economies. This bubble that's going to pop, I sure hope that people eventually see, because what's going to happen is the Keynesians are just going to continue doing what they do. The only thing that they can do is print currency and try to manipulate interest rates, and they're going to continue doing that, and it's going to become more and more extreme. You know, when I updated my book, one of the things that I found recently when I was on the Fed's website, I looked at the tax revenues that come into the government, and I saw a chart that looked to me very similar to the stock market. And so I started comparing them, and I discovered that before the U.S., before the year 2000, when the stock market fell, it did not really affect tax revenues in the United States, unless you go all the way back to the Great Depression. After the 29 crash, tax revenues fell dramatically. This time, we have all these tremendous levels of debt, the federal debt, but there's private debt and everything else. And we're so leveraged out that deflation, they just cannot allow that to happen. And during this next crash, the amount that tax revenues are going to fall is going to threaten the survivability of our own government. And at that point, the Federal Reserve has to print and print and print to try to get if the tax revenues follow the stock market, which they do now since the year 2000, in order for the government to survive, the Fed has to come to the rescue. Well, you know, they had to create about 300-400% more base currency than existed in 2000, you know, before the crisis of 2008, to get us out of that crisis. Well, now we have base currency, instead of 0.8 trillion, we've got around 4 trillion. And so, you know, you quadruple that, and now we've got 16 trillion of base currency, and that's about equal. You know, you're talking about printing as much currency as currently, for base currency, that currently exists in M2. We're up at about $18 trillion worth of debt and an $18 trillion currency supply, something like that. I haven't checked in the past few weeks, but this is... this is what the Keynesians have, the trap that they've gotten us into.
Right. You know? And so to follow, for those following along at home, the theory involved here is that, well, we have this crisis, we have to fight it. But the trajectory is that the story is it was a little crisis met with a fairly significant response. I'll call that 1994, 95. And then there was a 1998 crisis, a little bit larger. So a little bit larger response, 2000, bigger yet. 2006, 7, bigger yet. And so here we are. And so the responses have been getting larger and larger. So the trajectory of this story is, and I think you would agree with this, Mike, they're going to keep doing this until it just breaks on them. And when it breaks, we would agree it's going to be fast, furious, a little ugly, nasty, brutish, and short. And so we get to this part, which is, well, how do people protect themselves? And you and I agree that gold is a way to do that. It's really a hedge against monetary madness and systemic risk.
And gold, silver, emergency food.
Yeah, those are the basics there. And but this is something you and I have talked about. I'd love to get here recorded because that's also proven risky. You're really close into the business, and risky because there have been some notable failures in the gold and silver dealer network. And so this is something I want people to buy gold and silver, but I don't want them to be exposed to either scams or just inadvertently poorly run businesses that they get caught into. Let's talk about that a little bit. I think it all began with Tulvin going under a while back. I know some people who got caught in that.
Yeah, you know, the problem here is there's a whole lot of people when they first learn about gold and silver, they try to find a dealer and they go around and they shop and they're looking to save that last 0.25%. And the problem with that is that all of the dealers purchase their precious metals at very, very close to the same price. You know, this is a war. If it's bullion, if it's not collector coins, if it's bullion, there's a worldwide spot price, and you pay a premium for physical. The spot price is determined by paper contracts that are traded on the exchanges. So there's a little premium for physical that the dealers have to pay, and then they have to make enough not only to survive, but to ensure that they have a well-run business. There are certain insurances that they have to purchase. There's certain accounting methods. If you're not spending $20,000 to $50,000 per month on your website to make sure that it stands up to industry best practices, that it is not likely to be hacked and such, you're putting your customer in danger. So you have to have a certain amount of cash flow, and you've got to have a certain profit margin. There's dealers out there that you know, a merchant account, when people make a credit card charge, the merchant services from the bank takes about 3% if you're a bullion dealer. That's what the bullion dealer pays for anything that is charged on a credit card. Well, a lot of retail people do not know, the customers don't know that when there's fraud on a credit card, they get to look at their credit card statement and say, oh, these charges weren't mine, and they don't have to pay anything. Well, the bank doesn't lose any money. It all comes out of the vendor's pocket. The dealer that sold the merchandise is the one that ends up taking the loss. And if you don't have insurance to cover that, which is another 1%, then you're exposed to those potential losses. And what happens is you go along and everything's fine for quite a while, and then the fraudsters, the thieves on the internet, the people that buy stolen credit card information, they figure out some new scam, and suddenly there's a flurry of charges that go bad. And the thing is, as a dealer, you don't find these things out for 60, 90, even 120 days, because you don't find out that somebody charged gold on a credit card and you shipped it to them until after the person that had that credit card number gets their bill 30 days later, and then catches that there's a fraudulent charge on here and disputes it. And they've got time to do that. And so you find out when the bank comes and rips that currency out of your account. If you don't have the insurance to cover that, it can put you out of business because these fraudsters discover a new method and suddenly there's a whole bunch of charges that go bad. And I know that there's dealers out there that aren't making them. We've gone through a period of margin compression right now. What happened was when gold was going up toward 1900 bucks and silver going up toward 50 bucks back in 2011, a whole bunch of people jumped into the business. And a lot of them are small and they're run very lean. And running lean is a good thing unless you're putting your customers at risk because you're not running it properly. It takes a certain amount of profit margin to be able to have all the security that a properly run business needs. So through this period of margin compression, you know, we went through some periods where there were shortages of precious metals. And there's the spreads rise, the dealers are allowed to make a little bit more. But then through a period that we've been through for the past couple of years here where there's supply, dealers start fighting for market share, and they do that by dropping prices. And if you're not buying from one of the big dealers out there, you could be putting yourself at risk. And shopping to try and save that last 0.5%, I mean, between Tolving, Bullion Direct, and Northwest Territorial Mint, you're talking about more than $50 million worth of gold that people paid for that never got delivered.
Ouch.
And so people got hurt to the tune of $50 million. And so you want to make sure that you're not exposing yourself to that. You've got to choose a large, strong dealer. And it may cost 0.25% more to ensure that you're going to get your gold and silver.
Absolutely. So that margin compression, really important idea. And it's important for people to realize that, you know, even though you're spending, I don't know, $50,000, $100,000, $250,000 on gold, it's a big ticket item. It's not like purchasing a car. The margins on these in most businesses that I've looked at, it's about 2% between the bid and the ask.
Yeah. And depending on the size of the order, it could be as low as 0.25% that the dealer is making.
A quarter of a percent. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, with this fight that's going on, the margin compression is making it, I know that there are dealers out there, that are going to be going out of business. This is just what happens during these periods. And so I just worry. I caution the listeners to, and another thing, you should know who you're buying from. If you can't find out who owns the corporation, who is running that dealer, then you probably shouldn't be buying from them because there's no reason for anybody to hide. You should always know the proprietor of the business that you're dealing with.
So let's add it up for people then. Obviously, a larger corporation that's been around for a while, that would be good. But so you want to know who owns it. You just said that. If it's too good to be true, it probably is. So if there's an extra special deal out there, maybe a yellow caution flag ought to go up. But the red caution flags need to go up when people are starting to report long wait times associated with a purchase.
Yes.
What else should people be looking for?
Well, long wait times, though, can also happen to some of the larger dealers when there's a shortage. And there's going to be shortages again. There will be rushes on gold and silver. There are periodically.
That's a good point. I was talking about like right now. There probably shouldn't be any long wait times today.
No, there aren't. There aren't. So what was that question again?
What are the things on the checklist for people to ask and perform due diligence and apply a little common sense to? So knowing who owns it, if it's too good to be true, it probably is. Long wait times. What else?
There's some corporations that are much, much larger than others and very financially stable. I don't want to particularly name them.
All right.
But there's, it's how long they've been in business and how big they are, how many customers they've got. This helps. But just be very, very wary if you're looking for the absolute lowest price. There's a middle range. There are people out there that are too expensive, but there's also people that are too cheap. You want to be careful.
Yeah.
With that, that's the biggest red flag for me is if they are the lowest. Tolving was the lowest price out there, and he was not operating his business with all the checks and balances required and the insurances required to make his business robust enough to withstand certain forces and downturns and so on. Bullion Direct was a fraud that was going on. They never made a profit. They were in business for I think 15 years or something. They never made a profit. They had an exchange going on where people would leave their precious metals in storage. And there was about $25 or $30 million that was lost with them. And so it's just something to be very wary of for your customers, because for your listeners, I mean, because I want your listeners to be safe.
Me too, of course. And the summary here is that selling gold and silver bullion, it's a business. And just apply the common sense you would apply to any business. Think about, like, it's like you're walking into a storefront and you could normally detect these things by just observing, by looking around. It's a little bit different online, a little extra due diligence. So I think this is good to understand. If it's too cheap, there's going to be a risk there. Just understand there's a risk. The risk has cost $50 million lately as well. And then there's other, if it's too expensive, it's too expensive. So there is that middle range, and that's a way to begin to parse that. But
another thing I would caution your customers against is, when I wrote my book, there was a section on beware the pitfalls. And almost all scams, the vast majority of them, come from, it involves numismatic coins, collector coins. Collector coins have very large, we were talking about these small premiums of 1, 2, 3% basically is what the premiums are on bullion. If very large orders, it can be a whole lot less than that. As I said, it could be basis points. But when it comes to collector coins, premiums are typically like somewhere between 15 and 50% profit margin. And one of the things that I said in my book, if you are getting into collector coins as an investment and expecting to make money on them, you should know more about them than your dealer. Mm. And if you don't, then my suggestion is to steer clear of collector coins. But I do know people that have been hurt on collector coins, even while the price of gold doubled, because they bought back when gold was about $700 an ounce. They ended up losing on their investment of gold coins because profit margin on them evaporated. If you're buying bullion from a bullion dealer that's making 2%, the bid ask, the buy sell spread to the customer, there has to be a profit in both directions to keep the business alive. So there's going to be maybe a 3 or 4% difference between what you buy the product for and what you sell it back to the dealer for. That means that gold has to rise 3, 4, 5% and you're in profit. But if the spread is 15% or 50%, then gold has to rise that much to be able to get into profit. So,
well, all fantastic advice. I love your wisdom and your experience in all of this. And in closing, I have to know, when's the next installment of Hidden Secrets coming out? What do you have planned?
Well, we've got it scheduled to come out within the next couple of months, and then we should have about three a year. These are, you know, my passion is the education. That's what we have started serving banner ads and things like that for the past several years. Well, since the inception of my company, what we have done is give people information for free, and that is basically our marketing. We give something to the customer first, and if they like us and trust us, then they come to us and purchase, and we take those profits and we plow it back into education. All of our competitors create ads instead, and the producing these episodes is not cheap. It's a very expensive endeavor, and there are periods of time where there's a greater reward than others that comes out of it. But yeah, we've got we should be producing about three per year. There's one coming out within the next few months.
Well, excellent. I'm looking forward to it. I hope everybody listening is looking forward to it. They're a real service. They really are. They're a service, I think, to humanity, if I can be that broad. But it's for anybody who takes the time to view them, they get smarter and they learn something. And this is, context is so important right now. Without context, it's just like we're in a cage being shocked and we don't know where the shocks are coming from. That's very maddening. So get the context. Watch The Hidden Secrets of Money. We've been talking with Mike Maloney. Mike, such a pleasure as always.
Thanks a lot for having me, Chris. It was great.